You're listening to the Monocle Arts Review, and today we're getting arty in London as we round up some of the capital's exhibitions at Victoria Miro, Alan Christea, and the National Portrait Gallery. And to guide us through is the private art dealer and advisor, Kathleen Fox-Davies. Kathleen, welcome to the programme.
Thank you so much.
It's been a while. It's really nice to have you back.
It's been a nice summer, but good
to
be back.
We saved up our best for Friday afternoon. This doesn't go out on Friday afternoon, but never mind. We can let our listeners into a little secret. So we've kind of flagged up some of the things we're going to talk about today, but there is a sort of an artistic elephant in the room in London that's sort of happened, that wandered into London this week, which is this Bowie show at Sotheby's. Give us a little bit of background on this.
This is a very, very, for lack of a better word, cool collection. Bowie, obviously, everyone knows David Bowie. He's one of the most creative minds of
20th century,
yeah. More than just a generation for sure. And this is his personal art collection. And this is a man that inspired so many. And he was so creative in his own way. And you're getting a little bit of an insight into what brought him joy and what brought his passions alive and what inspired him. There are over 400 objects of art deco, of furniture, of fine art, of real focus on British art. Over 200 pieces are actually modern British artists. They're going up for sale at Sotheby's in November. And Sotheby's is rolling out this incredible preview exhibition that opened on the 21st of this month and will show through the second week in August before it globally tours and ends up back here in November. It is an awesome exhibition. They've picked some amazing highlights that they're museum quality pieces. They're quite quirky, weird, amazing furniture. You've got Bowie's actual stereo system that he listened to his records of his favorite albums on. And you get the chance to not only see it, but maybe even own it if you're the lucky bidder come November.
It's one of those things. Bowie was a sort of a private person in many ways. Mm. I mean, he made great play of being an artist and of being an ordinary man. Do we get a sense that this collection reflects the facets of his personality that we think we know, or do we go on a very different trip with Bowie via his collection?
I think you see a very different side of him. There's some pieces that are quite stoic, they're quite serious, and when you first look at them, they seem almost at odds with some of the weirdly quirky and wonderful works that definitely scream David Bowie. And I think that that's the great bit, even of this preview collection, the exploration that you as a viewer go into this space, and there's this exciting vibrancy in the room as people are discovering new things about an artist that perhaps, you know, they spent their life following.
And from what I understand, there's an idea of Bowie. You get very much get a sense of Bowie's eye. He didn't really work with people to build his collection. He was a fan. He went to auctions. He went to private views, often in disguise in his later years in New York City. Do you get a sense of that? That here is a person working out their own thing, buying things that aren't necessarily cool or fashionable, but have a kind of, you know, that helps you even more perhaps understand the kind of man that bought them and loved them.
I believe so. Obviously, with the preview exhibition that they have on, they're putting the big names, the greatest hits. But even within that, you've got some more minor artists that are working with found objects. You've got a Marcel Duchamp, and next to it, you have an artist that's known by people that follow that genre of art. But to someone else that follows contemporary or Art Deco furniture, would have never seen this before of works that are made with found objects. You've got really amazing British modern bronze sculptures next to quite weird, quirky, amazing sculptures as well, but are used of light bulbs and neon piping. So you do really get that he was attracted to quite amazing, very varied works, whether it be objects, paintings, and also you've got the big names. You've got the Basquiat, you've got the Frank Auerbach, you've got the best hits of any major art collection that he's definitely got.
This is not a museum show. This is very much a selling show. It's at Sotheby's. I wonder what, and from what I understand, there's obviously things that are quite cheap or potentially very good value. Mm. I mean, obviously this is an auction. Ollie Barker at Sotheby's will be trying to boost up those zeros as much as possible, as is his job, as is his want. But can you factor in a Bowie factor, as it were, into the price? Or do you think that will happen in the auction itself?
I think that the way from at least the highlights that they've actually put the estimate prices on, they are priced to sell. They're priced to entice maybe even a first-time buyer that's more of a a music Bowie fan, right? Yeah. Music fan collector that wants to own an object owned by that was once loved and owned by David Bowie. And so some of the things are priced, I believe, to sort of entice you in. But I think because it has Bowie's name on it, it's going to have an added value.
And do you get the sense, actually, I mean, so many collections we talk about are, you know, in free ports and in storage facilities around the world. This seems to have a feeling that a lot of this stuff was probably hanging over his mantelpiece.
I would say the majority of it was.
Yeah.
These are pieces that he put on record talking about the artworks and how they change his moods when he walks by them daily. And sometimes, depending on how he's feeling, he's actually responding to the works in different ways. These are pieces that he surrounded himself with to inspire his own creativity, to bring joy to his surroundings. And it's now for the world to share.
Yeah, it's beautiful stuff. And who knows why it has ended up at Sotheby's. But hey, you can fill in your own blanks, possibly. And that show is travelling all over the world. I think we can give out some details, but really, Googling Bowie and Collector will do most of it for you. The sale is going to be in London around the beginning of November.
Yes.
Yeah, so there's plenty of opportunity to see that wherever you are in the world. Okay, so normal services resumed. We're going to talk about a more conventional show here. We're going to the National Portrait Gallery, Kathleen. This is a big show of William Eggleston's work. People will be familiar with the name, kind of one of America's iconic photographers of iconic imagery. Mm. He is both an icon and so are his pictures. Talk us through what we can see at the MPG.
This is a really exciting show, both because it's William Eggleston, who is basically the forefather of color photography. He was the first artist to be working with it, and he inspired the next generation. And really, the big names of color photographers that we know now wouldn't be around if it wasn't for the work that he put in as a pioneer in this field. But this is the very first time an exhibition has been put together focusing on William Eggleston's portraits, which is a little bit of a bizarre thing that no one's ever approached his work from that subject matter before. It's an incredibly well thought out, interesting, beautiful exhibition that really does encompass the entire body of this artist's work. You've got the major hits and the highlights, but you also have pieces that have never been seen before on exhibition. You've got his black and white works, which are lesser known, really. You don't see those come up as often. You don't see them being shown and showcased in both museum and private gallery exhibitions. So it's really wonderful to see how the evolution of his own eye came about within his practice, going from black and white, quite small pieces, and moving into the color, and how they all relate. It's a really lovely story that's told through this exhibition that's been put together, which is quite funny because he's known for artwork that it doesn't sit well on its own. They don't have a narrative. They don't tell a story. And normally they're quite unsettling, how they sit with people and the way they've put this together. It shows it in a different way.
Does it feel better that they are grouped together? Do you get a feeling of a man's work, an artist's work, a photographer's work, rather than kind of seeing it out of context, perhaps against other artists' work? And when you kind of go, hang on, I need to know the before and after in this story.
Well, I think coming at it from where we are, where Eggleston is already one of the biggest names in not only modern art, but in photography specifically, we understand what he's doing. But if you take it back to the 1960s and 1970s, when he first started working and being shown, I mean, this was really upsetting artwork. It's pieces that are framed in really disjointed ways. He doesn't follow any of the rules of composition of making a picture that people can read and understand. There's no narrative. The framing is quite bizarre. He's focusing on quite banal subject matter. So it'll be focused on a tattoo on an arm rather than on the face. And he's approaching that tattoo in the same loving way that one would approach an intimate portrait of a face, but at the same time, he's standing back from it all. So you don't know whether he's approaching everything in a loving way or whether he's standing back and really sort of an agnostic view of all of his subject matter.
And such a kind of daddy of photography, right? I mean, you know, I think of Jürgen Teller's work, Wolfgang Tillmann's work, that has these familiar tropes where you kind of wonder how interested, how disinterested the eye is, you know, almost whether you just kind of drive through a town and you just let your shutter go crazy and then you see what you've got at the end of it, or you know, or how pointed the gaze is.
You get the feeling that you're getting snapshots of a time and a place of life in the American South. I believe with Eielstyn it is very pointed in how he took the pictures, but it's that snapshot feel of his work that he received a lot of criticism for, which is now what he's applauded for now.
And just finally on Eggleston, it's an interesting thing as well. The National Portrait Gallery, it's a wonderful institution in many ways, but you're always asking that, yourself that question when you're there, as to whether you're seeing pictures of great people or great pictures of people. You know what I mean? I mean, it seems to matter who the picture is of rather than who took the photograph
exactly,
or who painted the painting. In this case, you have pictures of nobodies, but by a somebody, and that seems to be the right way about it for me.
But it's actually a mix in the show.
I suppose there are,
because you do have celebrities,
some famous faces,
but you don't. But he treats them in the same way as he would treat a rusty old car, and that's what's so wonderful about this. Is it does take the concept of a portrait, where it is about the subject matter and the sitter, and he completely turns it on the head, where you could be looking at anything, and it's a very democratic way of approaching and looking at a subject, and it's a nice, refreshing way of approaching an exhibition at the National Portrait Gallery.
Yeah, exactly. It's great stuff. It's William Eggleston. It's at the National Portrait Gallery in London until the 23rd of October. So finally, we're going to squeeze in a couple. It feels like we're doing a chart rundown now. We're going to go to Victoria Miro first. This is a Yayo Kusama show. She of the Pumpkins. What's going on at Victoria Miro?
This is a really fun exhibition. Obviously, I think everyone probably by this point has heard about this show. And if you've not heard about it, you've at least seen the images via news feeds or social media. It's closing this week. So if you've not seen it, pack a sandwich, a bottle of water, and be prepared to queue.
Right.
I saw it on a Wednesday morning as they opened, and it was still 20 minutes to get through the door. Well worth the wait, but it is an exercise in patience and queuing and people watching as a performance as much as it is the actual 20-second experience of being in the pumpkin mirror room or the chandelier of grief room, but worth every moment of that experience.
Chandelier of Grief, great name for a heavy metal band, I'm thinking. Okay, and people have got until the end of the week to go and see that, one of the grand dames of contemporary art. In fact, both of them, both Victoria Miro and Yayoi Kusama. And finally, we're going to go to Alan Christea. What's happening at this wonderful, august old place in Mayfair?
Now, this is the farewell exhibition for the Alan Christea Gallery in his space.
Yeah, so
he's going to be closing
and moving
to St.
Right.
James. And what a show to end a time in Cork Street on. This exhibition is the first for Gormley with Alan Christea. Hmm. It's the first time that they've published prints together. And it's a really incredible show. Much like Kusama, they're dealing with the same sort of theme of body in space, and the work actually needs the interaction of the viewer playing within the gallery space to really understand the scale and the theatrics of what's going on. But here, Gormley is actually covering his nude body with crude oil and petroleum jelly and literally falling, splatting himself onto 3-meter paper. And it is, they're incredible. They're organic. They're changing. They're framed beautifully. They correspond with a woodblock print that is much more static and serious and dark. But they have this amazing play interacting with each other. And as you're in this space, you're realizing what Gormley's trying to do, talking about how we interact in a built environment that he's actually created for us.
And a really beautiful sort of thing. I mean, albeit so much of Gormley's work is about himself, is about his own body or about the human body, this seems like a very ego-free thing to do for a sort of 50-something, 60-something, you know, bloke to be getting his kid off and spatting himself. You know what I mean? This has been done by artists, but they always got kind of gorgeous girls to kind of do this for them.
This is
very different.
But at the same time, he is creating, he started off with this obsession with the concept of the Vitruvian man and how our scale and even the metric system is based on proportions of our own body. And he's actually creating his body as the new standard.
Okay.
So it might not be so much ego, because it is so free and the pieces are wonderful. And this is a much more democratic way of presenting his work, being it print, it's affordable to an average collector rather than his sculptures that are you know, museum quality and almost untouchable to the everyman. He is creating himself as the everyman, and this is a show that he's making available to the everyman.
Perfect. So the swan song of the Alan Cristea Gallery, at least in its current situ on Cork Street, that's Anthony Gormley, Yayoi Kusama at Victoria Miro, and before that we talked about Eggleston at the National Portrait Gallery, and of course you won't want to miss David Bowie, that travelling show which culminates in a sale at Sotheby's in November. Kathleen Fox-Davies, thank you very much indeed. Happy holidays, by the way.
Thank you, you as well.
It's been a busy time. It's time we all went away. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. My producer was Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for a music review with Baylen Leonard. But for the time being, for me, Robert Bound, thanks for tuning in.